You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, the USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. I'm Jeff Connors. Today we have a very special guest, Tim Swords, who was a Pirate four-year letterman under Pat Dye and Olympic weightlifting coach. And before we crank it up, I'm going to go ahead and recognize our sponsor. Ed Watkins Marine has two locations to serve you, as they are located in Denver and Cornelius, North Carolina, in the greater Charlotte area of our state. He has fishing boats, pleasure boats, pontoon boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, engines, and UTVs. He has all the brands you are seeking: C-Pro, Suncatcher, Pontoons, Tri-Tunes, Stingray, Yamaha, Suzuki, Mercury, Vexus Bass Boats, Explore Skiffs, and more. Whether you're looking for a new boat or repower your existing boat, Ed Watkins can help you with your boating needs. Visit them online at edwatkinsmarine.com. We appreciate Big Ed's support of the show. And Ed was undoubtedly the most enthusiastic and positive athlete I've ever coached. So thank you, Ed Watkins. So, Coach, we're back to you. And very happy and honored to have you on the show today.
Oh, I'm honored.
So I have seen many posts on Facebook over the years, been familiar with you at a distance and with your accomplishments at East Carolina and your background and your passion for strength training. And really today, we just want to tell your story because we want to honor you as being someone who's had a lot of success in the Pirate Athletic program when you were there. And then after that, taking so many years to coach young people and add something to their lives that's meaningful beyond just getting strong. And so we want to start a little bit with your early life, kind of where you grew up, your early influences, and then, you know, what eventually brought you to East Carolina University.
Well, you know, Coach, I tell you, I think I was raised pretty much in your area. I was raised in the south of Pittsburgh, about 70 miles, close to a place called Wheeling, West Virginia. The town is New Martinsville, West Virginia. And New Martinsville, West Virginia, one of these places that on Friday night, everybody was at the football game. The people in the town, they had that type of mentality. It was a small town of about 7,000 people that loved kids, and they did everything for the kids there. Now, I'm not so sure that's the way it is anymore, but that's the way it was when I was growing up. We as kids, we played all the sports. Growing up, we were coal mining area, steel mill area, chemical plants, pretty much blue collar. And being from being an Irish kid like I am, and we all thought we were tough, but we just raised in that environment. Work hard, do the best you can in class, and that's what my dad demanded of us. You know, basically, your job is to be a good student, be a good person on the street, treat people right, and then and work hard at whatever your sport was. It was I got involved in strength training. My dad was a two-sport athlete at Notre Dame, and I had a couple older brothers that were really, really good, and one was an extremely strong guy, and he was kind of an innovator. He got pretty much everybody in the town lifting weights. He had 70 Division I scholarships, 70. And he could have played offensive line or defensive line at college, and he went to Virginia Tech, and he played there for 4 years. He went to a prep school first in Virginia, but he got everybody involved in weightlifting. And he contacted the people at the York Barbell Club, and he contacted some of the strength coaches like Lou Rentke, some of these guys for the Steelers, and some of even a guy that ended up coaching me, a guy named Norbert Szymanski, who was a 5-time Olympian. He coached me some in my career. Not much of an articulate man, but a guy that was that had a simple scheme, and basically, you're going to do what I say, or you're not going to be here. He was that kind of guy. He was just a tough guy. Anyway, long story short, my brother got us involved. I quit basketball because of weightlifting, because of strength training. I wasn't big enough at that time, I was kind of a chubby kid. And I told my dad, you know, I don't want to play basketball. And he said, well, you need to play something. You need to do something. What are you going to do? And this was in 1970. I told my father, so, you know, Dad, I think I'd like to start lifting weights. And he looked at me, he goes, well, that's a good thing. He said, do you think you'll stick with that? So I was the fourth son. I had three older brothers. Two of them were great athletes. They were all good athletes, but the one was exceptional. And he was a little worried about me because I didn't know where I actually stood in that pecking order of human beings in that house. But so I started lifting weights, and I kind of had it just was really a good thing for me to see. And I developed quickly. I was blessed with that. I just seemed to get stronger. It opened a lot of, it gave me opportunity that I never would have had. But, then my father says, well, I'm dyslexic. Then my father says to me, well, you know, I wasn't that good of a student because I was dyslexic. And so I started trying to read magazines that were related to strength training. And so I would read these magazines. I would read like 3 times in a row. So my dad ended up saying, well, this guy's reading this. So we're going to get these magazines to him all the time. So I had a Strength and Health magazine and Muscular Development magazine show up at the house. So I'd read these things front to back 2 or 3 times. I'm sure you're familiar with those magazines from York Barbell.
Back yes, sir.
Yeah, well, I used to read those things 2 or 3 times. And that was the only thing I would read. So I was very passionate about getting strong. We started powerlifting, which made me even stronger. I was a very strong kid. I did a double 700 squat and deadlift, and I benched 440, but I was stiff. So in college, when at East Carolina, I couldn't move really. Straight ahead, I was a beast, but I couldn't go. I was stiff, and I was naturally a flexible person. I said, I'm doing something wrong. And so I started trying to learn how to do the power movements. And, thank God we had a good strength coach came in there and helped me out with that. But we tried to do power cleans and all that stuff, but we just weren't very good at it. We could just do things brute, just being a brute. And we weren't highly skilled. It was just being a big, strong kid is what it was. But we had this good strength coach come in at East Carolina, Jeff Johnson, and he kind of, as far as technique-wise and whatnot, and he changed my life. He changed it. Well, there's other guys too, but he was a major part of that. And if I could tell you a quick story about Coach Dye and Bear Bryant, I would like to share this with everybody if I could, because this kind of changed my way of thinking. And it what gave me great passion to work with kids, because that's what I love the most. I really love kids. I was walking down in Scales Fieldhouse. We were walking down there by Coach Dye's office. We were getting ready to play a spring football game. And I was wearing my pads. I had my ankles taped. I just had that cut-off shirt on. And I walked by Coach Dye's office, and I saw him in there talking to somebody. And I said, who knows who's in there? I mean, it could have been anybody. And as I was walking back, he yells at me. He says, Tim Swords, he says, come in here. I want you to meet somebody. So I walked inside the office, and Bear Bryant was sitting there. I was like, oh, my. Wow. So here's Bear Bryant. Bear Bryant's sitting there, and I go, gee whiz. And I didn't know, I was a bit intimidated. I really was. I love Coach Dye like a second father, but Bear Bryant just had a different energy about him. And Coach Dye said to Coach Bryant, he says, Coach, this is Tim Swords. He's our strongest football player. That's what Coach Dye told him. Of course, I being 6 foot three, I tried to be 6'4" because I was trying to stand up even taller. I was really proud of the fact that he made that statement. So I Coach Bryant got up out of his chair. He shook my hand and he says, "Son, you must have passion for what you do." I was like, "Wow!" I wonder, like, how do you respond to that? I'm sitting there, my old dumb hillbilly from West Virginia. How do you talk to that? I was not expecting that from him. So I just looked at Coach Bryant and I said, "Coach, you know, I just train hard. I do it. I try to motivate my teammates. You know, I do it for myself. I want to be a player. I want to contribute." And he says, "Well, you're doing the right thing and you're on the right path." And he said, "It doesn't matter what you do in your life," and I'll never forget it, "this passion you have, it doesn't matter if you're passionate about, you know, your children or Jesus Christ, which I am, or growing tulips or dogs. You gotta find something that gets you excited about getting up in the morning." And, you know, I'll never forget it, because you must be passionate for what you do, to me, changed my life. And I was around all these smart people growing up, but those words from Bear Bryant changed my life. And I think to myself, what do I really enjoy? Well, I like helping people because of my Christian background, and I really love children. Now, do I want to be a school teacher? I don't know. What can I do that can really help me? I mean, that I can help children, either at the church or the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, or I worked with youth and gangs for a while. That was pretty tough, but I've done things like that to try to figure out where I belong in the grand scheme of this area. You know, what can I do to give back? And that's what I decided to do about 35 years ago is open an at-risk program for children. And that's what I've been doing since, along with my regular job, which I am now retired from. So, you know, I might not have been putting in strength coach hours, because I know you guys put in 60, 70 hours a week, but I was putting in 20 extra to my job. And you know what? And it was easy, because I saw the benefit that these kids, you know, whether they were coming off drugs or you just didn't have a dad, just needed some guidance, you know, and it just made me feel good, basically. And I was raising a family that was always giving back to the community. And that's basically, it's kind of, I'm glad I was in that family, because I am happy when I get up in the morning, because I have another opportunity to give back. And it's not a job. It just makes me feel good. You know, I'll do my morning meditation and I say, "Man, this is great. Good Lord gave me another day, and I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna do my best to help these children." That's the truth. It's great. I'm high on life because of that. And I have been for, you know, 25, 30 years. It's been a good gig. So I probably rambled too much. I apologize for that. But this is what's kept me in the sport, and kept me focused on the right thing, in my opinion.
Well, the purpose of this podcast is to hear you ramble. So that's all well and good with me. And I had no idea that we had so much in common. Because, of course, you know, I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, and you're probably even familiar with places like the American Legion and Sons of Italy.
Oh, yeah.
Polish weddings.
Oh, heck yes. Heck yeah.
Polka dances.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. We used to go to the Ambridge VFW Hall up there to compete, and we go up to Butler. Anyways, Katanning, you know, I don't know what part of Western Pennsylvania you're from, but yeah, I love the Pittsburgh area. You know, even when it was tough people up there, tough as nails. but no, I love that area. I really do. I'm not too far away. I mean, I grew up with guys that you played college football with.
Yeah, I mean, I played at Salem, West Virginia, and you were talking about that 215-pound nose guard. You know, we played at 52 slant and angle, and our nose probably weighed 225, but nobody could block him.
Probably Rocky Martin.
Well, Rocky Martin was there when I got there. Yes, sir.
Okay. Was that the guy you're talking about?
Well, after him was Bob McGurko.
Okay.
Who I still talk to, and he coached in the Pittsburgh area when he got out of school. He I can't remember the high school he's at. In fact, another coach who played with my dad at Salem also coached that same high school. But yeah, Rocky Mountain, Rocky Martin. I got a couple stories about about Rocky Martin.
I bet you do.
But yeah, so. Yeah, it's really interesting. You might even remember how to make a pierogi.
Yeah, I don't, but I've eaten several of them, and you can tell by my waistline. So I'm trying to do better.
Well, that's awesome, and you're probably aware if you've heard any of these podcasts that it is a Christian podcast, and. I was just wondering when you grew up, the young Tim Swords, was there anything you can remember that with your faith that helped you to overcome adversity?
Well, you know, Coach, honestly, my faith, my entire life has helped me overcome adversity.
Yeah.
Going to Catholic school until eighth grade, and doing all the sacraments and all that stuff and being around devout Catholic parents. Every day when my dad was home, he was saying the rosary, and I remember, and honestly, I still do it today. And I do it because I need that. I don't need it because of temptation really so much, because I understand, you know, Dunkin' Donuts is the biggest temptation. I mean, you know, I'm not doing bad things, but I've lost a couple children. So, that's where the strength, that's my strength. I need the prayer. If it wasn't for that, I would be in pretty dire straits if it wasn't for my faith. The other thing is that, you know, and I don't understand it. And your listeners are probably going to think, man, this guy's crazy, but this is the truth. And I've always kind of had intuitions about things that have come that are happening now. You know, and then I get the phone call saying, hey, this just happened. And so I don't know. It's almost like a clairvoyant type thing. Now, we were in Wheeling, West Virginia. My mom was at a hospice. I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm staying with my brother on Chaplain Street in Wheeling, one of those Victorian homes there. And I had this tremendous lower abdominal pain. This type of stuff has happened to me a lot in my life, a lot. There's even an East Carolina story about this. So I get this abdominal pain. I go into the bathroom. I'm sitting there in the bathroom, say, okay, what is wrong with me? And the pain goes away. I get up, I walk into the room, and I said, my mother just died. Hmm. I put clothes on, turn on the light. 15 minutes later, my sister-in-law comes downstairs and she says, what are you doing awake? And I said, mom died. She said, how did you know that? I said, I don't know. I think. Things. A friend of mine jumped out of Jones dorm, if Jones dorm is even there anymore, in Greenville. I knew that kid. He wanted to go out and go downtown in Greenville, and I said, "Nah, I'm not doing it. I don't feel good. I don't feel good about this." And that kid ended up killing himself. I mean, I didn't know that he was going to do that, but I just felt something was bad. And so the clairvoyance, and this is not all. There's a few dozen of these weird gut feelings, but this happened. These things happened to me. And I knew my one son died too. I knew he died. I was going to find him. I knew that. So, I mean, So I've had major highs and major lows in all my life. You know, I've been blessed with strong faith, and the strong faith has really kept me going. And the fact that the good Lord has given me something that I truly care about and I'm passionate about, and that's the development of all the best I can do is to say the right things to help people not do silly things like hurt themselves. Hey, I'm coming home about 6 months ago. And 6 months ago, yeah, right, September. There's a very large young man who I used to coach for 5 years on strength and conditioning. He's 6'5", 320-pounder, he's an offensive tackle. He played up there at San Antonio, University of Texas San Antonio. He tried out for the Steelers. He got cut. He's sitting on my neighbor's yard. He was so messed up mentally, he didn't know where I lived. I'm driving by him. I go, that's Josh over there. So I stopped my truck and said, what are you doing? He says, I just need to talk to you. He didn't think he was worth anything because he didn't make the Pittsburgh Steelers. I said, Josh, I said, you're the male mentor in your family to your two younger daughters. You have to be strong for these two, your sisters. Well, shoot, after about 3 hours of him squeezing me to death, and because he's just a big, strong guy, and crying and everything else. I mean, we had these interactions. He's a Catholic. I gave him the rosary in my truck. I mean, not saying, you know, but it meant something to him. And so we go back for, and finally I got him involved in some help with a person, you know, psychiatrist actually first. And we found out what else he was passionate about. And right back to the Bear Bryant thing. Well, you know, he, if he couldn't play football, he wanted to be a barber. Well, so the kid went to barber school. Well, you know, he's not out yet, I don't think, but he's at least he feels like he's accomplishing something in his life. And that, you know, it doesn't, I mean, yeah, okay, Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, shoot, that's how many people get an opportunity to do that? But, you know, he's actually thinking he's doing. I mean, he feels good about what he's doing, and his little sisters have him back. So, I mean, this has been ongoing for 30 some years, Coach, and it's just something that I am blessed. I'm blessed to. Say, dear God, give me the right words to say, because I need to say the correct things to these people so they don't. It can't be just some mundane answer to what they're saying or something. We got to find out what can help these kids and get them going in the right direction. I mean, I got college strength coaches. So I got one at UCLA. I got them at UCLA. I got that kid. I used to pay for his, give him gas money so he could get home. Now he's one of the Olympic football strength coaches at UCLA now. These are success stories from people that just didn't, you know, they just needed some guidance. And it, what the heck is it? Comes right back to my mother and father. You know, what would they do? What was your parents do? Well, you know, I'm not gonna let anybody go hungry, or I'm not gonna let this kid run out of gas. He can't make it home. And he's driving. I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna feed this kid lunch. It's not that big of a deal. I don't know. I'm passionate about this, as you can tell. Bear Bryant is a part of this. My father is a part of this. My brother is a part of this. There's people in my life that have believed in me, and I give it all back to Jesus Christ, because I need help too. Jesus Christ.
We all do. Yeah.
Sorry?
I said we all do, no doubt.
Gee, I'll tell you, my dad says to me, I had 12 football scholarships. My dad says to me, I really wanted to go to Miami. Miami wasn't very good back in the day, but I was just thinking Miami Beach is because I'm a dummy. So you know, 17, 18 year old kid. He says, you'll be home in 6 months. And he says, quite frankly, I don't want to see you. That's what my dad told me. He says, you need to stay in school. So he goes, you're going to get to play. Coach Dye told me. Now, of course, you know, you got to go and do some performance. Yeah. And Dye says, hey, your son's going to play. We graduated three people to his position. He's going to come in and play. And he says, tell me, what you want to be like your – want to be like a couple of your brothers and ride the bench and then and get to play your junior, senior year in college? I said, well, yeah, I kind of like to play. And I visited East Carolina, and it's the best thing I ever did in my life. It's almost like the good Lord shoving me in that direction. Everybody I met, my roommate, Matt Mulholland, who's a really good offensive lineman there, Wayne Bolt. I don't know if you know Wayne Bolt is or not.
I do.
Oh, my God. Well, Coach, well, you talk about a character. Well, he was the one that showed me around, and Pat Dye, Coach Dye. So I went out with Bolt, and I went out with a guy named Jimbo Walker. And Jimbo does a lot of stuff for the big emails for the people in classes. And he keeps.
I know him, too.
Huh?
I know him also.
Oh, Jimbo, too? So these guys showed me around. I had the best time of my life. You know, and it was, you know, just, it was really good, clean fun, you know, honestly. And I met my roommate there. I met Matt Mulholland there, and I go, this is a no brainer. And Lou Holtz gave me a scholarship at NC State. And I actually met Billy Cowher there, but Bill Cowher's a good guy. He liked drinking. He drank a lot of beer, believe it or not. Anyway, long story short. He's good old Western Pennsylvania boy. That boy could drink some beer now, let me tell you. But anyway, and I said, this is it, man. This is the place. These people, Eastern North Carolina people, they'll take you off the street, and feed you, and just think, man, just feel good about having you around. I said, man, I never been in a place like this in my life. I mean, it was fantastic. It was like being at home.
Yeah.
But man, this is, you know, there was nothing, there was no other option that made any sense. And so, you know, I love East Carolina. I wish I could live in Eastern North Carolina, honestly. But I don't think I got four grandchildren, and I don't think that's going to happen. But I do love East Carolina. I love what guys like yourself and you know, just the alum. Just what people have done to make the university grow. And I look at the stadium, I feel proud because, you know, I said, man, we were on the very front part of that. Coach Dye's teams were excellent football teams, and we were a family. You know, Coach Dye used to talk about oneness. I'm thinking to myself, okay, oneness. Jeez, are we talking about just one person? Because no, the group of people being one together in a brotherhood and loving each other. Man, I said, it was the biggest fraternity on the campus.
Yeah.
Just the guys that loved each other. And I cannot think of one time that there was any type of negativity put towards anyone, black, white, mix, Asian, or anybody on this, nothing was negative. It was all say, hey, man, we're going to bring you up, and we're going to work together as a team because we care about you.
Yeah.
Sheesh. Where do you find a situation like that? I mean, we kind of had it in high school. I mean, we were in the state championships those years and the OVAC champions, and we kind of had that, but we didn't have it like East Carolina. And for Coach Dye to be able to do that with a group of 110 young men who come from Florida and the mountains of West Virginia, in the Tidewater area and Pennsylvania, and to bring these guys together. That's what he said. How can you, you look at your defensive line or you look at your defense and you got these 11 guys out there and all from different parts of the country. And they're working together, man. All they know is we're a family. We're here to win as a family. We're here to win together. No one can do it by themselves. We had a few flamboyant players. We did. We had a guy that, he still has the record. The linebacker, geez. Harold Randolph. He called himself James now. Harold Randolph probably had 420 tackles in college. I don't know. It's something like that. He's a little flamboyant, but when it came right down to it, he was a team guy. He'd dance a little bit after every tackle. Hell, he's dancing all the time. He made 400 tackles in college. Yeah. I mean, he was dancing. But you know, it's like Coach Dye said, well, you guys' job is to keep those linemen off Harold Randolph so he can use that 4.540 and go make these tackles at 205 pounds. It's Harold too small Randolph. But he was a dandy. He was a really good player. But, you know, so it was a no-brainer for me. You know, East Carolina, you know, I'm blessed. I'm blessed to have had that opportunity. And for Coach Dye to say the things he did. And when my freshman year, I was going to start my first game, and it was October 4th, I think. And I went to bed feeling kind of weird. It was a Thursday, and I was feeling weird all week. Because normally I talk to my father, and I called the house a couple times, and I talked to my mom, talked to one of my brothers, and my one brother, who got me involved in weightlifting, weight training. He was home. He was home from Saudi Arabia. I'm like, what are you doing home? I mean, you know, are you home? So he was home and talked to him. I said, what's going on? He goes, I'm not, I'm just on vacation. You know, he didn't want to stay. My dad told her, don't bother him. He's okay. I'm going to be okay. Well, my father passed away that week. And, so I get the coach, Ken Hutcherson, he came in and he woke me up at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And, he said, hey, he told me what happened. Of course, I was like, sheesh, you know, it just took all the wind out of my sails. And so I packed up what I could. We took it to the airport. They actually, American Airlines held the plane unbelievably. So somebody did something with American Airlines. They say, took me out there, tarmac, loaded the deal. I got on the plane, went back to Pittsburgh. But you know, I had some real issues there with anger. And you know, I remember Coach Dye getting mad at me and putting a tire on my head because I had a cheap shot or something, make me run the athletic field a few times. He's not, treats you any different, anybody. But we had a lot of sit down conversations that he would ask me how I was doing. And once again, he says, you know, he said, Tim Swords, Timmy Swords. That's what he said to me. I said, well, coach, I want to talk to you about something. He goes, how are you doing in school? I said, well, coach, I'm not that good. I'm having a hard time with certain things. I got some depression. He set me up with, you know, he helped me out there, and without Coach Dye, I never would have finished school, much less been. I never had tendencies to be bad, but I was, you know, I was having some problems, and I felt like my family over there, I felt like they were a little deceitful to me. They didn't tell me anything, you know, but yeah. Anyway, I since then, I mean, after that, I still had some issues with that, but then, you know, I always went to church and I was always praying. I pray all the time. Gee, I pray a lot. And I still pray a lot. I pray a lot. I've prayed a lot all my life. And I know that's my strength. I know it is. If I didn't have that, gee whiz, I would have nothing. Because I need that. I need the faith. If I don't have faith, what's that old thing they say about faith? You know, people say you don't have faith until you're in a foxhole and the bullets are flying by you. you got faith then, you know, when people at you, you have faith, you know, and I've had that faith. I've had that faith all my life. Without, I couldn't operate, Coach, if I didn't have it. I could not operate. So, but Pat Dye saved me. Pat Dye was a second father to me, and he saved me from myself. And anything else? I mean, you make a decision. I was thinking about some poor decisions, and Coach Dye saved me from poor decisions. And I'm trying to do the same thing with you know, the people I've worked with. I've worked with over 1,100 kids in the last almost 40 years. It's not all of them stayed, but I treated everybody the same. These guys, you know, had a dad come up here. This is a couple of years ago, and he had two daughters, and they were volleyball players. They were good ones. And he says, well, he goes, how are you going to train my daughters? I said, I'm going to train them the same way I trained the boys. He goes, what? You know, what do you mean? They got hips and legs and shoulders. We're not going to train them any different. They got to jump. You have to have range. They got to have good mobility. You have to be powerful. I mean, why train them any different? Of course, nowadays, you never know. Someone might identify as something different. But these were actual girls, and they were going to train just like we trained the kids that's playing linebacker, slightly. But we're going to train them. We're going to train them pretty much train on your feet, because that's how you play, you know, and train with explosiveness, range of motion stuff. And you know more about that than anybody, because you've done it for thousands of athletes. But I've just been a kids guy, and I've had other opportunities. I did some Navy SEAL work. I did some of that. That was kind of fun. And I worked with the Oilers as a contract guy, Bob Young. Offensive guard, then became a strength coach, offensive line coach. He's passed away now. Then I trained the Rockets strength coaches, not their players. They didn't trust me with their players. They trust me with the coaches.
Yeah.
The strength coaches came here, and we did, we were doing all kind of pulling movements where, you know, we were actually doing jumping and some stuff, and it was fun. Anthony Falzone was, I don't know if he's still with the Spurs or not, but Yao Ming's guy. And matter of fact, at the Beijing Olympics, Anthony Falzone, he leaves the Spurs, I believe, and then they offered him a job back, but he went and trained Chinese, the Chinese national team in Beijing. And so, they were paying him a lot of money. I think, you know, that's obviously why he did it. But I've had some opportunities to coach in college. I think five or six. And, quite frankly, I can't get away from what my true passion is, and with the children, with the kids. I just want to see the kids do well, and that's more important. And from this little program, I think we've had 66 national champions out of this program over the 40 years, and we've had 106 kids go play college football out of this program. Had a couple Olympians. Had 14 people represent the United States. And I've had opportunity because of this. It's been a blessing. So, you know, to have the opportunity to represent the country 41 times now. Weightlifting has helped me see the world and helped me understand that people in Chechnya, which is a tough place in the world in Russia, not bad people. There's some bad people there, just like there's some bad people in the Fourth Ward right here in Houston. But the Chechens, you know, they're a little extremist. Yeah. They had a big Chechen war there, and basically Russia came and leveled the daggone city of Grozny. Who in the world in their right mind goes to Chechnya? Well, if the State Department of the United States of America is behind you, then you could go to Chechnya. You know, and be it feel pretty well protected because you're representing the country. Or how about a place like Turkmenistan? You know, you go to Turkmenistan and you're it's like the whole city is like a facade. You got these beautiful marble buildings, 10, 15 stories high. Some of the streets are made out of granite. The sidewalks are granite. There's nobody in the buildings.
Wow.
It's the darndest thing you've ever seen. They eradicate all the animals. So you know, we were there 11 days, and we saw three birds in 11 days and an ant. We were in the training hall. So I'm there training, you know, we've got the United States world team. And so there's basically, there were 16 competitors, male and female, or eight men, eight women. And there's this ant. it's walking in front of this, in front of the lift. It's a little ant. We're sitting there. And he goes, oh, there's an ant right there. I'm going to step. I said, don't step on that ant. That's the only living thing we've seen in this place. Dang on. I said, don't step on that ant. Let it live. There's nothing living in that country. That was the weirdest place I've ever been.
Wow.
It's you know, it makes you so happy to be able to come home, you know?
Well, what I wanted you to mention a little bit about the transfer of Olympic lifts to athletics. And of course, tell us a little bit more about your facility. Do you have your own facility? Is that where you train all these kids?
You know, Coach, the facility is about 500 square feet.
Okay.
And it's a 2.5-car garage. And yeah. The reason I did that, well, I did it for a lot of reasons. First of all, there's no overhead. Now, I am a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
It's helped me some. And most what money I do make from the nonprofit goes into helping at-risk kids, which I have a slew of them, help them travel. I had a facility at one time with when I was married to my first wife, and she was kind of it wasn't a good situation. She had a daycare after school thing after on the other side of it, and the money that what she was charging. This isn't about the money. I mean, it's okay to charge something, but you know, we're not going to bring, you know, 10-year-old kids in there and charge these families $150 a month for something. You know, we're trying to get these kids more mobile and you have more body awareness and moving around a little bit. And sooner or later, if they can do some of the stuff, then we'll work them into what they can do, basically what they're capable of doing. And so that didn't work out after about a year. Now, yeah. Then we got divorced and whatnot. And I said, well, you know, there's no overhead in this garage. I wanted to keep it small and to keep it to about 40 people a week. So, right. So that made more sense. Now I can do that with not much problem. Everybody here will learn how to use their body properly to extend, you know, that motor pattern of extension. And we're training on our feet. The kids, they have to be a basic kids thing would be, we check out their mobility, a lot of mobility work, ankle, hip, mobility stuff. We'll do, everybody's going to do, these are kids now, 10, 11, 12, 13, even young as 9 on occasion. Everybody's going to do, they're going to do hyperextensions where they're parallel with the floor. Hyperextension is a terrible word, but they don't go hyperextend. They go to parallel to the floor. They'll do one arm rowing. We hope that we'll get to the point where if they can't do pull-ups, we'll do lat pull downs. We'll do body weight squats. If they can't do them, we'll raise their heels. We do seated pressing with light weights. We'll learn how to shrug first, and we'll do upright rowing. We'll learn to jump and shrug. And then we'll learn to do a light front squat and overhead squat. That's real basic stuff for kids. The high school football players and the guys that I got that are playing college when they come home. Of course, all those guys are making more money than me now. Get these kids that are making $50,000-$60,000 a year. Like, oh my God, I can't even believe it. When they come home, we go right back to. They don't necessarily need to do the full lifts. They don't need to do full lifts. But if they have problems with mobility, then we would like to get them to the point where they can do the full lifts. you know, the snatching and some of that stuff, it seems real scary to people, but it's you know, I can teach somebody how to do a power snatch in 10 minutes. And it's all about proper functional posture. So the functional posture, it's stable spine, but and people want to move with their back. You move through your hips. If you move through your hips, that's where you get your true stretch reflex from your hips, hamstrings, and lower back. And so, you know, people want to bend at the waist. No, you move through your hips first and then bend. And that's that stretch reflex. Every time a person ever hit a sled in their life, if they hit it properly, that's how they hit the sled, or if they're doing a vertical jump. But the transfer, it made all the difference in the world for me, Coach. I mean, heck, I was the power lifter who was stiff, and I started to do the Olympic lifting, and I learn from the hang, extend, shrug, you know, and we tell people, yes, tell somebody to extend. Well, what does that mean? Okay, you're extending. No, well, okay, then jump. Okay, when you're jumping, you're extending. Now, can most people jump with a 400-pound hang clamp? Nah, not so much. Some can, but you're going to extend, and so. The transfer, gee whiz, you know, vertical jumping, and you guys tested that all the time, probably on a basis at East Carolina or North Carolina when you were strength coaching. I'm sure y'all did. I mean, that's a true test of power. Well, we did it up in Marquette. We had the Olympic team up there in Marquette there 6 months ago. They're all tested, you know, on force plates and stuff. But, tell you a funny story. I know I'm getting off the track a little bit. We're talking about vertical jumps now, but it was 2000 before the Beijing Olympics, and I was involved in one of the camps at Colorado Springs at the Olympic Training Center, and they had we had the best juniors in the country. These kids are all on. These kids were 17 and under, okay, and probably had about 15, 20 boys and not as many girls. It was probably the third dream team or whatever it was that they had. They had the basketball guys in there, and they had the people who were that were living at the training center, the weightlifters, and they were testing them all on the vertical jump. Well, the weightlifters had a higher vertical jump than the basketball players, and people were going, "Gee, that's impossible. There's no way that can be." I said, why not? I mean, these guys are standing violently and jumping with as much as 400 pounds. And a guy weighs 180. I mean, take the 180 pounds, take the 180 kilos, 182 kilos out of his hands. And he's going to jump a little higher, probably. Right. I mean, I got called me a liar. He says, well, why aren't they playing basketball? I said, well, because they can't dribble. They're good weightlifters. They can jump. They can't shoot or dribble. That's why I quit in the first place. I wasn't good at that either, you know. it's ridiculous. It's a true test of power, and that in the broad jump. Well, the broad jump, I mean, hell, you got to have a little more hip and ankle flexibility, you know. I'm preaching to the choir here, you know. Yeah, but it's what you can't tell. A lot of these guys, a lot of the coaches, and even in this area, a place like Houston, Texas, who produces some of the, you know, every year, we got major players coming out of this area. But, you know, yeah. These coaches, you know, this is how we did it. You know, so I'm dealing with something now I'm not really dealing with it. I have to deal with it. I am trying to work around what they're doing. So 3 days a week, the local program here, we've got 4 6A high schools within a 10-mile radius here. This place is, you know, just booming with kids. And so 3 days a week, they're doing 5 sets of 8. I mean, been doing this since Christmas, since they got out of the playoffs. And so they've been doing this now for going on, you know, 6 weeks. Same thing, every 3 days a week. They do 5 sets of 8 to bench, 5 sets of 8 to squat, 5 sets of 8 to hang clean, 5 sets of 8 in dumbbell inclines, 3 days a week. They do the same thing three days a week for if they've done their 6 weeks. And I said to a coach, I said, well, Coach, you know, why don't you guys let these guys get strong for about 12 weeks and don't take them out on the other two days and run them to death. They kill these kids. You're running kids to death. These kids are not. These are anaerobic guys.
Yeah,
we're not killing it. Don't kill these kids. Let them get strong for 12 weeks. You know, I told a coach, and a nice guy. He's a fired up guy. This coach, he's a good dude. I got two linemen. Two of his linemen I train here. Both these boys are 6'4". And they're like 210, but these guys are good football players. They play with good leverage. They come off the ball low. They're tough, but they're offensive linemen. They're thin, but they're tough kids. They can play because they're tough and they use leverage and also smart. I said, Coach, let me have these guys for 10 weeks and we'll just put them on a squat program. I have a squat program out there that's called Sword Squat Program. It's worked for thousands of people. A lot of the MLB people are doing it for their pitchers. Well, long story short, but let these kids work the big muscle groups and get them on a. Let's get them bigger. These guys can get bigger. They're never going to be 260 pounds. These guys don't have the bone structure for it, but they could be 230.
Yeah,
Who knows? I mean, they could play Division II football for somebody or one that's what is athletic enough. He'd be a tight end. He'd be a heck of a player for somebody. He's also mean, but they won't do it. They won't do it. And here's the answer. Well, we're a team. And I said, I understand it, Coach. I was a member of a team for 15 years. I understand teams. But we got to get, you know, we ought to try to get these kids, you know, they got to get bigger. You know, this conditioning stuff you guys are doing, and then the 2 days a week, they take them outside and they run the heck out of these kids. I'm talking about an hour and 10 minutes, and it's just these guys don't need to run through the woods for 4.5 miles. What are you doing to these guys? It's just ludicrous. It's ludicrous to think that we're still doing this. In 2024.
Yeah.
What are we doing? And you know what, Coach? You could write a book or I could write a book. I know you've already written books. But the point is, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write one. But it doesn't mean anybody will read it. I'm just saying, you know, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to write something that's going to be directed towards the training and the development of kids.
Yeah.
And to get them to do hey, I've had four kids clean jerk 400 pounds in high school. Now, all four of those kids represented the United States of America in competitions. Two of them were senior-level competitions. All four, and that's three of the four, went to the Olympic trials at different Olympic trials for the United States. It can be done. It can be done. Why can't we?
Yeah, I had a power quotient that I used and devised. It was five values of vertical jump, three values of broad jump in inches, one value of power clean, add those three and divide by 40 time. And that worked really well for me. And Bruce Carter at UNC ended up with the highest score. I think he came in the door as a quarterback, probably power cleaned about 240 his senior year. He power cleaned 405, you know, came from the floor. 40 inch vert, 11 foot broad jump, 4.3, whatever, 40 time, went on to play for the Cowboys for a period of years. But yeah, it's just like what you're saying. I mean, everything you're saying is what I believed in through my career, you know, and now you got people saying, well, we don't want to hurt people's wrists. We're going to do these trap bar jumps to substitute for power cleans. And, nobody wants to do a snatch. And of course, nobody wants to do overhead because they talk about impingement.
Oh boy!
So
you know.
So yeah, you're fighting a battle.
Yeah, I'm fighting a real battle. I'm lucky in a way that I'm lucky in a way here that I have other people here that are like wrestlers, and I've got three. I have three MMA pros that train with me, not all the time. Off and on, there's periodically as they in about an 8 week after training, they do some conditioning, they do about 6 strength work, then they go and do their specificity stuff, their sports stuff that they need to do, and they do more calisthenics, but they still do pulls. So, yeah. But doing, but they all do. They all snatch. They all do push jerks and power jerks and whatnot. A couple of them do overhead squats, but they don't need it. But because they've got good range, they just like doing them. But the other kids here, I've got some girl. Well, Sarah Robus, she's 3-time Olympian. She's pretty special. But that's a woman who clean jerks 360 pounds. But you know, I've got some young girls, some girls here that are, clean and jerking 225 pounds.
Yeah.
Don't judge that book by its cover. They can take care of themselves. You can't get these coaches to move on any of that stuff. Only happened to me one time, and I was blessed to be able to coach a school up around Baytown, Texas. And I was just going there after my job. I worked in Baytown. I was going in there and 3 days a week, and that coach was open to it, and his son was involved in weightlifting. So his son was a defensive back, and his son lifted nationally in weightlifting, and I had had three kids out of that group. Two of them actually became residents at the Olympic Training Center. One kid was one of the heavyweights I was talking about. This kid, he clean and jerked 475 pounds. As an adult at the Olympic Training Center. And, once he graduated, I think he got just tired. He just got tired of just the vendor banging weights away and only lifting in 3 meets a year. That's tough too. I mean, football, you got a competition and you got spring ball that is tough. The other guy, from Baytown, Texas, this kid, his name's Corey Wilkes. Special kid. He passed away on a motorcycle accident, but he and I had the same birthday. Not that that's the reason he was special, but he was just a good guy and a really good personality. This kid's the one that had the vertical jump record up there, that when the Dream Team 3 came in, and he was the one that did a 46 inch vertical. And everybody's looking at him like, geez. Well, this guy's got a rocket in his hamstring. I mean,
absolutely.
This guy's got it. He's unbelievable what he could do. You still can't. That one spot in that one school in Baytown, Texas. That was one school that was really that they were open minded about it. And now since some of these coaches have gone on and retired, they have come back and ask me questions and are now more in agreement. I go, Coach, why weren't you in more of agreement when we were doing this stuff here and trying to work with your athletes?
Right.
It's everybody thinks they're doing the right thing. And that's fine. That's great. But I don't think anybody's really willing to, not everybody's willing to go out and try to continue. For me, on my own dime, I went to Russia. I did it on my own dime. Went over and trained for about 10-11 days. I went to Ukraine, worst place I've ever been in my life. I went there on my own dime, trained for a week, worst place I've ever been by far. I don't need to be cracking on Ukrainians, but the Ukrainian men are probably the most arrogant, macho group. Hell, I'm almost 100% Irish. I thought we were macho. Those guys, we can't hold a candle that bunch. Ukrainians. I don't know why they think they're so darn good, but boy, and I don't mean crap. I shouldn't be saying this. Maybe you'll probably cut this part out. But they just were not very nice people at all. But I went over there trying to learn something. I went to their sports schools. I want to learn something that I can bring back. The Soviet sports system was so well known, renowned on what they did with these kids, and yeah. They're taking these. They're obviously drugs involved. I mean, because they were doing some bad, you know, they were doing that kind of type of garbage. But the where do you take a pretty much a race of Caucasians, and you got guys that are actually outrunning some of our guys over here? I mean, what are you doing with these guys? You know, I mean, it's not that it's not possible, of course, but being everybody genetically, but these guys, they just had people after people after people that are just what are they doing in these sports camps? So I wanted to learn. I went in there and said, okay, what do you got? And I learned a few things. And one thing I learned is everyone does deep squatting. Yeah. Nope, that's parallel squat. Everybody does high bar squatting, and everybody does deep squatting. Everybody does plank work for transverse abdominal training. Everybody does rotational stuff too. And maybe that's even where the Russian twist came from. Heck, I don't know where that name comes. They all do rotational strength stuff, which I thought was pretty unique for weightlifters, because weightlifters don't need rotational strength so much. And the other thing was, is everybody does overhead stuff. And through my interpreter, which was probably, I'm probably getting 75% of everything that's being said, is that when you put the barbell over your head, let's say, I weigh 285 pounds. Okay, so if I'm putting 285 pounds over my head, then where's the center of gravity at? Well, the center of gravity is over my head someplace. You know, I'm 6'3¼". The center of gravity is above my head. So what type of stresses is that putting on the smaller muscle groups, or the muscle groups in general around the shoulder, the hips, a little bit? You know, even from external, internal obliques, a serratus, teres major, minor, whatever. Those joints, or those muscles around the joints, are it's working those smaller muscle groups, building stability, which you know, machines don't really do a very good job of it. Deadlifting, it builds stability, but it doesn't do through the entire range of motion of the shoulder. I learned that everybody does that stuff. When I was down there in Rio, it was the morning of when my girl Sarah was going to lift, and we went in early about 10 o'clock in the morning to do a light specific warm up. And in the Olympic Village, they had a tent. The tent was about probably 60 yards long, maybe even more, by about 30 yards wide. And in this tent, they had every piece of equipment known to man in there. And so there were different, they had 11,000 guys, people, men and women there at one time, you know, coming in and out training. Now, that didn't, a lot of people sent people home, obviously, but before even the closing ceremonies, but we were in there, and I tell you, I really wanted to find the Jamaicans, and boy, it was another blessing for me. I'm going down through there, and I see the green, the yellow, and I said, okay, man, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna see what these people are. And you know, Mustafa Powell, Usain Bolt, and those three stud women. I can't remember their names, but I can remember Powell and Bolt. They were in there doing power snatches. I go, holy crap. The fastest humans on the planet are doing the quick lift.
Yeah.
I'm like, geez. And I was talking to the coach, who was, he was a sports science guy. And sports science assistant coach. And then they had the head coach, who was an older fellow. And they go, oh, yeah, we train this all the time because of the start. You know, the stairs frequently coming out of the blocks, but that we also do full squats. Now, he did admit that Bolt and some of them aren't that excited about it, but they did do it. And the girls were quite a bit more technically sound than the men. And
those videos of Bolt lifting, they're not real impressive, but.
No, he's doing them though.
Yeah.
Of course, that guy, you know, he's got to be. He's got to be over 6'4". Very nice guy. But, I just felt good about saying that. And,
sure.
And I've shared that with track coaches and some parents, you know, so my son, you know, he's got to get faster. I said, well, you got to do a whole lot of things to get faster. But, you know, these exercises, yeah. I mean, so, you know, if they don't have the mobility, then doing the full lifts and training, we'll try to get to the point where they can do the full lifts. You know, I don't know about you yourself. You were a defensive back, weren't you, coach? You probably always had good mobility.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, I had good mobility until I started powerlifting, and then so genetically it was there. For me, the Swords family, we had really strong shoulders, a strong lower back, and we weren't very strong in the legs, so we had to squat.
Yeah,
and when we squatted, we all got faster. But you know, so the full range of motion stuff was kind of a no brainer. It took me too long to figure it out, but. You know, it's and that's how what we do here in this 500 square foot garage. You know, we try to get we just critique the heck out of the kid, and then you know, I've had kids that have been 6 months later like the baby giraffe again. They're you know, they grow 3 inches and they don't control their body. Like, you know, you guys got these good kids coming in, or you know, you got college strength coaches. You guys got kids who are already developed. Now you're sure you're going to develop them. But you know, these kids out here, man, they might change year to year to year, these 12, yeah. 13, 14-year-old kids. And so it's a constantly trying to, you know, move the workout in a way that is going to benefit them the most. But everybody does pulls. Everybody does some form of the lifts besides pulling. we don't use straps on hang cleans or cleans. We use straps on power snatches. We don't use them on full snatches so much. I do an exercise out here, which I know is very beneficial, where we'll do the straps. We'll take the bar to above the knee, and we'll just basically just jump and shrug our shoulders. Well, you know, if I could get some of these kids, I've got a bunch of shot putters. I've trained a bunch of them through U of H, and Leroy Burrell and Carl Lewis, they gave me a job about 5 years. I didn't want it because I didn't want to come. I didn't want to drive to Houston. I didn't want to go down there for 60 hours a week because I'm retired. So I love you guys, but I'm not coming down here every day for 10 hours a day. But it was making these kids more explosive, and they want to know what they were doing. I said, well, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. And these guys are, well, they're putting feet on their, you put a couple feet on their discus and shot. I mean, it's working. But anyway.
Well, Coach, I'm going to have to wrap this one up here.
I appreciate it.
I'd love to get together again and talk about programming. I had two podcasts with Bouchek Snyder here recently talking about speed. We're probably going to end up doing 3 or 4 of them, but love to get back and talk about some more programming and some more philosophy. I appreciate so much the stories that you shared with us today.
Thank you.
And, you know, my deepest condolences for your son.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that story. But really appreciate what you've done with young people over the years. I've been very impressed with you. Even though I haven't spoken with you, I've been following you. So,
well,
I just wanted to let you know that.
That means a lot.
And
I'm just a regular guy here, Coach, just trying to do the right thing. That's it, period.
I got you.
Nothing fancy about me.
Yeah,
I'm just an old Irish boy that's just trying to do the right stuff. You know, that way with the and asking the good Lord on a daily basis, help me say the right words to motivate.
I hear that. I'm Irish myself, so I got you.
Maybe we got a guess why we got a good connection.
That's right.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for coming on. And we'll see if we can get together again. And this is Jeff Connor signing off for Absolute Empowerment. And God bless. And we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Thank you very much, sir.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on the Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at The Sports OBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at The Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!